It's now time for Let's Get Healthy with Bill Swale on Talk Radio 1370 AM. He's here to take your call at 390-1370. And now, here's Bill Swale.
Hey, welcome to the show. And this is the, it's about good news. It's about the fact that we're getting some rain, unless you are at ACL.
ACL.
And that's too bad. So we're going to give, we don't normally do the weather. We're going to do it today because it's very easy.
Yeah.
100% chance of rain today.
Today it'll be the mud bowl instead of the dust bowl. It's going to be a little bit wet up.
I think, I hope the grass holds up. It's not going to hold up.
No, that's true. It's going to be a mess. I think this is going to be Austin's own Woodstock. Well, maybe they'll have the mud bathing. It'll be good.
Some mud wrestling.
Hey, why not?
Backstage. We got mud wrestling backstage.
It's a big crowd. Everybody will get into it.
So, we got Lane Sebring. There's no rush. Hey, Lane?
Yes.
Hey, how you doing, Dr. Sebring?
I'm good.
I wasn't sure you're on the line or not. So, do you remember Dr. Amy Neusel?
Hi, Lane.
Sure. Hi, Amy. How are you?
You know,
great.
Dr. Neusel.
How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
You should be here. Now, this morning, I understand why you didn't want to be on the show this morning live with us, you know, because we had Victor Carsrud. And he's a pretty good-looking chap. But you should be here today live because
we got
Dr. Amy Neusel.
I'm missing out.
Well, you could be.
Bill's just a
you
big
could
flirt.
Be. Yeah.
No, I know.
Yeah, but she was just telling me that you know I'm late. In fact, I just got here. I'm running late as usual. But she was just saying that at my funeral there's going to be an empty casket because I won't be there. I'm going to be late. They'll have to go wait a while to get me out there.
He'll be on Bill 30 time.
There we go. That's right.
Do you tend to be late a lot, by the way, Lane?
Do I?
Yeah.
Have you ever talked to any of my patients before? One of the things that they don't mind, that I have a very interesting selection process for my patients, and they tend to wait, but we cover whatever we need to cover during their visit, and that's extended. And so they said, you know, okay, I don't mind waiting because I know you're going to take time with me. And so that's the attitude of my patients. And so it works well.
Mm-hmm. Well, when they know the care is good, then... Yeah, they accept that sometimes things take longer than you budget.
I'm late.
Well, I know that you're a Ron Paul fan, so
I am,
and I am too. I mean, I think he makes sense because he is a doctor. He understands this medical system. And I was going to play a little bit of what he has to say, about 7 minutes, and then we'll talk a little bit about. I'd like to hear what you think of what he's saying. Because I think it makes a lot of sense. And that's what everybody's trying to do. Unless you want to just, we'll talk. How much time do you have, by the way?
I'm good for however much time you need.
You're not going to be on. You're not going to be talking to Ray later?
I will be at 5.
At 5. Okay. Well, I got you for an hour then, don't I?
We can't keep it indefinitely.
No, but I thought it might be interesting for people to hear this. And you being a doctor and me a pharmacist, we could just kind of agree or disagree. Let's see. Can we play that?
Yeah, you ready?
Yeah. You want to listen to this?
Sure.
Yeah, okay.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the medical care crisis that we're facing. Sometimes I'd like to think that it might be a government crisis rather than a medical care crisis. But we do have a mess in medicine, and there's a lot of talk about what's going on, not only throughout the country, but here in Washington. But first, I'd like to describe how I see the problem developing and what has happened. A lot of people are arguing that free markets can't deliver medical care, which I disagree with. And the problems we face today is not a consequence of the marketplace. It's a consequence, it's a failure of the government. This idea of managed care was introduced during the Nixon years. And this was a program designed to force people into medical care and provide a PPO and HMOs and tax credits for certain groups and not any others. So we have been enduring managed care over these last 35 to 40 years. And what has developed from this has been corporate medicine. The individuals who were best able to gather up the money passed out by the government or mandated by the government, they became the chief lobbyists. So the drug companies lined up, the health insurance companies lined up, the health management companies lined up, and it turned out that they started running the show and actually confused the problems and made it less efficient. So there was too much management. At the same time, too much of the money was going into these corporations, which were sort of the middlemen, and patients have suffered, the doctors have become unhappy. The main complaint I hear is that medical care costs too much. I can't afford my insurance. And there's a lot of truth to this. But one thing that most people don't talk about is why are the costs high? Why are the costs of medical care, why are the costs higher than, say, the cost of bread or computers or television sets or whatever? And the truth is it's a reaction to government. It's a reaction to our monetary policy. We do inflate the money supply. We do have price inflation. But prices go up more so in certain areas that the government gets involved in than in others. So the government's more involved in education and medical care, so you have more inflation there. And that is part of the problem. But over these years, there has been less competition in medicine. And that's been gradual over 100 years or so, where people couldn't enter the medical field without getting all kinds of licenses and protecting special groups. But if there's more competition and there's less insurance, actually cost goes down. So if you look at some of the procedures provided by the plastic surgeons or the eye surgeons who do keratotomies, and they're not under coverage of the insurance company, those prices actually go down. We don't have insurance for medical care. We have distorted that word. Insurance is supposed to measure risk, and you're supposed to buy that protection. So if you want medical insurance, you would be insuring against bad accidents or major surgeries or against cancer, something like that. But today, people expect prepaid services. They want every penny taken care of. They want the drugs paid for, and then that invites abuse. When third parties pay the bills, doctors, labs, and hospital, everybody else, all of a sudden they charge the most, not the least. I experienced medicine before they had managed care, and patients were always charged the least. And nobody went without medical care. The churches and volunteer hospitals and other groups took care of the people. But now everybody has to have this so-called insurance, which doesn't do a whole lot more than boost prices and then cause shortages. And then there's a demand for what? For more government. And that's where we are today. So we're going from corporate medicine, which was deeply flawed and not working, and now the proposal here is to go to government medicine, which is socialized medicine. It's really not worked well any place else. People, yeah, they get care if they want to wait and watch, but today, even in spite of our shortcomings, people come to this country still for top medical care. But that will soon change if we want to equalize everything by leveling it and making sure that everybody gets poor medicine rather than extra medicine, extra and better medical care. But we could do better. What we could do is introduce the notion that patients do have rights. Anything that comes out of Washington here, which something will, what we ought to fight for is the fact that we have a choice. We shouldn't be forced into a program. If the government starts a program, we ought to have the right to opt out of the program. We should be very generous with tax credits. Give tax credits for the entire amount of money you spend on medical care so that you can be independent. The concept of medical savings accounts is a good concept, and we should promote that and encourage that, and we should demand privacy. I mean, this is one of the tools that the government agents always use, and they've already set the program up. It's been passed already, where there will be essentially no medical privacy. So there's a lot of things that could be done through the tax code, the tax credit, and also protecting the individual's privacy. Now, the one other thing that we could do, we could pass legislation that would actually help along these ideas of the problem that we have with malpractice suits. What we ought to do is talk about getting rid of the antitrust laws against the doctors where they could negotiate with their patients and get the attorneys out of the ball game, where you would agree on an arbitration board and get a tax credit for buying an insurance policy like that. So there are ways you can, through the marketplace, literally reduce this fear-mongering and excessive costs that are involved in litigation against doctors. Because right now, believe me, if you get a bump on your head and you come to the emergency room because it's a third-party payment, we're fearful as doctors of taking missing something due to the attorneys. Believe me, you can't walk out of the emergency room without a $10,000 or $15,000 bill, and that is not the way it should be. There are alternatives. Now, I do want to say that the Campaign for Liberty did such an exceptional job when it came to 1207 and at the grassroots level. So I suspect that the Campaign for Liberty, if they get behind some of this free market approach to medical care, they can do a tremendous job in changing the course here in Washington, because right now we're on a course towards socialized medicine, and it doesn't have to be that way. I never dreamed it would be, we'd see the results that we have seen at the grassroots level, which then affected Washington, with now over 230 co-sponsors for 1207.
All right. Okay, Doctor. By the way, in case you're just tuning in, this is a show that is unusual. We're doing this, but I think it would, because we don't get into politics at all, do we? Usually,
not too terribly
much. It's really more information, you know, that you need to know about this. And Doctor, we have Dr. Elaine Sebring on the phone with us right now. And before the break, Dr. Sebring. Are you with us, Dr. Sebring? Hello? Dr. Sebring?
Yes.
Are you with us?
I'm still with you. You bet.
Okay, great. I just had a little trouble picking you up there. What'd you think of that?
Well, you know, the only problem Ron Paul has is that he doesn't emphasize this enough. I think that's one reason why he wasn't picked up on the campaign as much as he could have been. He's so comfortable talking about the issues that to him it seems kind of blurry. He's absolutely correct. It's corporatism has taken over. You know, the things that I would emphasize that he said is that the corporations, the pharmaceutical industry and the insurance industry have totally taken over not only the practice of medicine and the monies involved, but also the research. And that's something he didn't touch upon. You know, the pharmaceutical companies like to say they spend all this money in research, and that's a bold-faced lie, because 80% of the research done now on pharmaceutical drugs is done by the NIH, the National Institute of Health. That's our tax dollars supporting that research, and that happened when Reagan allowed those people, those scientists working at the NIH, to get a patent on their research while they worked under the NIH, salaried employees doing work. They could get a personal patent on it. So what happened was the pharmaceutical industry went to those people and said, you know, we're looking for a drug that does this, we're kind of doing this, and looking at that, and if you could create a drug that does that, we would buy it from you. We would buy your patent from you. And, of course, you're looking at millions of dollars, and it's incredible incentives. So actually 80% of the drugs, the research done on drugs today, the federal government is paying for. We're all paying for it. And so they've just learned to commandeer the FDA, exists as nothing more than an attack dog by the pharmaceutical industry. The former director says the FDA is incapable of protecting us from another Vioxx that killed at least 600,000 people in several countries, and they falsified the research. So Merck, the company that did that, they got in trouble for it, but nothing happened. And so even the research is being altered by this corporatism approach. There are a lot of doctors now going to a cash practice, and a lot of people are saying, you know, I'm just tired of dealing with all of the red tape. I'm not getting the care I need. I'm paying out this money and nothing's happening. And it's becoming, in many ways, a lot cheaper for people who are self-insured, if you will. If they buy their own insurance out of their pocket and their company doesn't pay for it, then they are often better off going to that type of a doctor and then having just a medical savings account and then a catastrophic coverage, you know, say even a $20,000 or $30,000 deductible.
Well, you talked about the FDA and all the. What's interesting is that, and it's really sad that so many of these studies are not are fabricated. Like for instance, this Dr. Scott Rubin, who was a prominent Massachusetts anesthesiologist, fabricated 21 medical studies that claimed to show benefits from painkillers like Vioxx and Celebrex, and you know those drugs, those type of drugs, they cost between 88,000, I'm reading here, 88,000 and 139,000 heart attacks,
right.
30 to 40% of which were probably fatal. And we're talking about Bextra and Vioxx and some of these drugs that were taken off the market, but for a long time.
And even Celebrex, which is still out there. It's no different. The chemistry of it is exactly the same as Vioxx.
Right. Somehow they were able to stay on the market.
Yeah.
But it's really sad because the public doesn't know. Pharmacists don't have time even to talk to patients a lot of times because they're just trying to crank out a lot of prescriptions. Right now with the swine flu, it's even more difficult sometimes. But even if they had time, I don't know what differences make. People are going to take it because we have so much faith in what's going on. But, you know, this fellow should have wound up in prison, I think.
Absolutely.
I mean, look how many people died.
A prison, I think, is, you know, I'm a little more dramatic. I'd go for a public execution because these people are doing horrendous harm. You know, 600,000 people, that's sort of that's a pretty big number of people that died, and many more than that had heart attacks and stroke that didn't die. Yeah. And they knew it would do this. They had to falsify their numbers. So believe it or not, that's how vicious this is, and the literature and the media, you're a glorious exception to that, but they are in line with the corporate desires. They control the media, and the doctors, unfortunately, aren't digging to find the truth. The true scientists are trying to get the word out, but they're not being heard. They cannot get published. Their research not in the major medical journals because, again, that's controlled by the pharmaceutical company. Marcia Engel is a professor at Harvard and said that she practices medicine there, and she said that the pharmaceutical industry owns our medical journals. Nothing gets published except what they approve. And she's former editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine, where she worked for over 20 years. I mean, this coup of the research and the information that we get of the journals and the media in general, it's pretty much complete. And save for, you know, a little bit of information that we can provide, you and I and some of the other doctors and the various practitioners, nutritionists, chiropractors, that we can provide is just about all there is right now. And it's a very scary time. And there's a much easier way to stay healthy. And you can avoid a lot of these chronic diseases, and that's what that's the other leg of this conversation that is so sad that information doesn't get out. And that's why we're holding these seminars and we have our radio shows because, you know, I know this is a passion for you as it is for me. It's very painful to see these people thinking they need to be dependent upon drugs when, in fact, they really don't.
Right.
It's funny. I was working with a media group in Houston, and we were going to put together a show called Side Effects that was, you know, each week we'd do a category of drugs and talk about side effects and alternatives and things like that. And the TV station that had picked it up actually had to cancel it because they got an offer on pharmaceutical advertising that, in their words, generated more income from them than any one show ever would. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, there you go. See, that's how they use this incredible money. And they're using capitalism to do it. I love capitalism, but when the corporatism starts taking over, it becomes through their dishonesty. You know, capitalism does not exist in a moral, mathematical, or in a mathematical vacuum. It's contextual with people, and therefore morality is part of that equation. And all morality is long-term thinking, which none of these corporations are doing. It's very short-term in their thinking, and they're just looking for the next quarterly profits.
Well, and it's self-protective. I mean, they're looking at their own interests, but nobody else's.
Absolutely.
Well, I got interviewed a couple weeks ago by KXAN because we're compounding Tamiflu for children, and you can't get that through the manufacturer right now. Mm-hmm. So while I was being interviewed, I took a chance of throwing in vitamin D3 as a great way to prevent the flu, right? The swine flu or any flu.
Absolutely.
Right. And I cannot believe it. They actually aired that. I
said, I
told the lady, I said, when you Google that, when you get back to the station and look for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, we got an audio on that we're going to play later because there's so much evidence to show the value of vitamin D3. It's actually a hormone. But we sold out that night. People actually heard it, and they never heard that before. Because you don't, you know, the problem is, you know, the media doesn't talk about that. All they talk is wear your mask, wash your hands, you know, take off your shoes when you go in the house and da-da-da, you know. But they don't talk about some of the real ways to prevent. And vitamin D3 is a great way. And I'm not going to use the word treat because then for sure I'll be thrown off the air because I take enough risk already. But I'm not going to ask you like I did. What about a month ago? I asked you if what do you think about the flu shot? You know, you said, "Do we tell you on the air?" But we're going to talk about the side effects. If people hear about the side effects of the flu shot, and I think that'll scare them a little bit. But we're going to do that later on the show. But you know, we're not saying don't take the flu shot, right? I mean, I'm not going to tell somebody that because.
And in some cases, you know, it may be the best thing to do, but in my personal life, and I'm exposed to it all the time, I just keep my vitamin D levels up, and I wash my hands a lot. You know, I'm a doctor. I wash between every patient, and I try to do that in front of them. An old doctor told me once, the patients like to see the doctors wash their hands. So, you know, it's just a habit I've got and teach to do that, and But I'm taking my vitamin D3, and I'm taking 10,000 international units a day. And, you know, there's been times when I've been coughed upon by a patient with a swine flu, and I'll go wash my face, and I'll go wash my hands, and I'll take 20,000 international units of vitamin D that day. And so, you know, Finland gave everyone in the country 10,000 international units a day for over 20 years. So if you want to know the safety of that level, yeah, there's a pretty good testament there. You know, I'll tell you a short story if you get a second.
Well, before you tell us the story, tell me what happened to Finland. I can't let you get by on that. They gave everybody 10,000 units of vitamin D3 and nobody died.
No.
But did they get any good results out of it?
Well, they did that for over 20 years. It virtually eliminated their problems with osteoporosis, reduced their cancer risk and depression compared to their neighbors, and compared to before and after they stopped doing it. So I really don't know why they stopped doing it. I don't think it was for health reasons.
Well, maybe they got lobbyists over there.
I'm sure they do. Probably our lobbyists over there.
You can't do that, you know. That's what the government should do, maybe. Obama just make sure everybody gets... In the stimulus package, just give everybody a bottle of vitamin D3 and tell them to use it.
Yes.
And maybe we could solve a lot of problems that way.
Right.
Anyway, I'm sorry, you were going to say.
Well, the story here real quickly, a few numbers involved, so listen up if you will. There's a nursing home in one of the northern states that had about 271 residents there, and all of them were neurologically compromised. They had head injuries or Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, strokes, that sort of thing. And they had 800 employees to take care of these 271 residents in the nursing home. They brought in two new residents that tested positive for swine flu. Over the next 3 weeks, 307 of the employees tested positive for swine flu, and one resident caught it. And the reason was because all of the residents, as soon as they arrive, are put on 5,000 international units a day of vitamin B3. I can't prove that's cause and effect, but that's very strong evidence for the use of vitamin D.
Well, there's a lot of research, a lot of research
showing
all the advantages of vitamin D3.
Well, and not only does it prevent, it shortens the duration. So if, like me, you've already had the swine flu, you know, for me, it was really mild. It lasted about 3 days. Easy.
And, you know, and that's what I'm seeing for a lot of the people compared to the regular flu. These are very mild symptoms.
Yeah, it's not bad when it doesn't kill you. It's just when it does that it's not so good.
That's right. Yeah. And, you know, of course, the pregnant women are the ones that, and they do well with vitamin D. They can take 10,000 international units a day of vitamin D3 as well.
Absolutely. And it's good for baby.
It's very good for baby. There's evidence for that as well. Of course, I always have them take their omega-3s to go with it. And then we know they're going to have a smarter baby, right?
That's right. Big-brained babies.
You know, they say now, research is showing that the lack of vitamin D3, or vitamin D, I should say, is leading to more cesarean C-sections following during the birth. So So there's problems when you're low in vitamin D, and if you're going to get pregnant or you are pregnant, I check vitamin D levels because there's not enough in most prenatal vitamins to cover it.
Mm-mm. No, not even close.
Yeah. Well, my producer just came back, so, and by the way, if you want to join us, 390-1370, you got any questions? We got a really good doctor, one of the best in Austin, don't you, Amy?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I got Dr. Newsel here, a naturopath. You got a pharmacist, a great doctor. You got any questions you want to call in about anything? Because I want to talk about your seminar when you did the diabetic seminar and what happened there. And we're going to talk about, quickly how people could reverse diabetes and how you can do that. If you have your patients or everybody listening wants to do that. And also heart. Your next one's going to be on heart.
Yes.
And I think that'll be great when you start talking about that. And also how to prevent heart attacks, cardiovascular problems. And then real quickly, how you can maybe treat and prevent dementia.
Sounds great.
You know?
So, because you're doing that. These are important subjects.
We got to get some patients to you so people can see what I'm talking about, how good you are.
Well, I teach them how to do it, and then they themselves can spread the word.
Well, if somebody has to leave us during the break here, can you briefly just give your phone number? If they can reach you.
Yeah, I'm at 847-5618. That's my office. 847-5618. And it's going to be a long distance because I'm in Wimberley. And 847-5618. And then we could also give you the number there if you call that number or go to the website, which is SebringClinic.com. We could also get you hooked up with the North Austin clinic that we have.
And by the way, SEBRING, SebringClinic.com. And I want to remind everybody that this is not an infomercial. You know, you're not paying me. I'm not paying you. Nothing's going on here. We just want people, this is information that you need to know.
Occasionally you run into people that truly have the luxury of following their passion.
Right. And you have a passion. We appreciate that.
As do you. Yeah. Thank you.
All right, let's take a break. Can you join us after the break here?
Sure.
Okay, it's 35 after the hour, and the number is 390-1370. Dr. Amy Newsel is with me today.
Hi.
Dr. Newsel, it's such a pleasure to have you here today.
Always. It's always a pleasure.
Can you stay on a little while, too?
I imagine I could stay around.
It gets better. All right, let's take a break. We'll be right back. Welcome. Where's the music? I keep trying to hear the music. Welcome back to the show. We have a good time. I hope you enjoy the show. We take your health seriously. Kathy?
Yeah, I have a question, please.
Oh, Kathy, yes, for Dr. Sebring.
I've read the other day that there was a Harvard study that said that diabetics should not eat eggs.
Diabetics should not eat eggs?
Is that true?
Dr. Sebring?
That diabetics should not eat eggs. Did I hear that right?
Yes. I'm trying to think.
I guess I would have to say I need to see that study to believe it. It's very, very difficult to imagine that a diabetic should not be. You know, they may be going on. Do we know why they said it? Does the caller know why? Kathy, do you know why?
No, I don't. There was very little information about it. It's just a little sketchy.
Yeah. I got to tell you, I wouldn't put much stock in that study. The only thing that they might be looking at is that eggs have a fair amount of cholesterol and a fair amount of fat, which is going back to the old mistaken thinking that they've been doing for years, and that fat is bad for diabetics and that protein is bad for diabetics. And so they put them on a high carbohydrate diet, which does nothing but perpetuate and worsen their diabetes. So my guess would be, and that's all that is a guess, that's what they were alluding to, unless there's some sort of chemical that they're putting in some of this commercialized egg farms, you know, that is a problem. But I really can't speak to that other than to say at this point, I don't believe it. I think eggs are very good for diabetics. I advise my patients to eat as many eggs in the morning as they want and leave out the cereal and the orange juice and the bran muffin, because that's what perpetuates and worsens their diabetes. In fact, that's how they became diabetic in the first place.
Uh-huh. So Kathy, was that on the Internet?
No, it wasn't. It was in a newsletter that I got from Dr. Whitaker, newsletter.
Okay.
Well, that gives it a little more credibility. Was he touting that as Dr. Whitaker touting that as a legitimate thing? Because I think he knows better than to go with the standard diabetes recommendations.
That is interesting. Dr. Neusel is also baffled a little bit too.
I just haven't seen the study, you know, and certainly what we have been seeing nutritionally is that eggs are fabulous food for diabetics because they don't alter the blood sugars to any significant degree.
I know, that's what I thought.
Exactly.
That's why I was so shocked to hear that.
Yeah, it's very low glycemic index. It lasts a long time in the system. They're not giving an insulin spike. So I don't know. I haven't seen the study.
Well, and nor have I. So well, I just read that. But I just wanted to check it out. I knew you all would know if it was really...
You know what? Y'all keep talking. I'm going to Google it.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, thank you so much.
Well, Kathy, thanks for the call.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, you know, I guess I should have gotten her number in case she wants us to call us if we can find anything to substantiate the study. But, you know, you might put Whitaker in there too, maybe. But what I don't like, and most doctors in Austin do not like either, is what the hospitals do. And I don't want to mention the name of any hospital, but they'll give diabetics...
They're all the same when it comes to their diet.
I know, but they'll give diabetics like pancakes with syrup and fruit on a Sunday morning breakfast, and their actually blood sugar is off quite a bit when they get out of the hospital. So that's the part that bothers me a little bit.
I heard that Seton was advertising about a seminar they were putting on for diabetics. I thought that was kind of funny. Because it's their dietitians doing it, and unless their dietitians have really stepped out of the box, and that is, they're as rare as hen's teeth.
Yeah.
It's very, very difficult, and I'll just say this on the air, it is very difficult to teach a dietitian anything past mm-hmm. their formal education. You know, Einstein said once, it is a miracle that curiosity survives formal education. Mm-hmm. And the truth of that is a whole lot of why we're seeing what we're seeing in the medical profession. The people have lost their curiosity, or maybe they never had it, and they get out of their formal education and stop learning. One of my colleagues we were in the same fraternity in medical school down in Galveston, and he commented one time. He says, "I was telling some of the things I was doing and learning." He said, "Wow," he said, "you never stopped after medical school, did you?" And that just echoed in my ears for quite some time. He's an excellent physician, but I thought, and you did, you know, is that what most people do? They really stop learning for the most part, or just get the same updates from their former professors through the medical journal. So I'm interested to see what Seton is going to be teaching.
Well, most of our pharmacists, as you know, at Peoples, go on to become a clinical certified nutritionist, and they become, well, like Jim, you know, Jim Meyer.
Sure.
I mean, this guy spends 2-3 hours a night keeping up with all the information on this natural medicine.
He's phenomenal.
He really is. Just a walking encyclopedia. And,
yeah.
He's unusual. Many of the pharmacists, and like the doctors you just mentioned, they don't continue studying. And I asked them one time, I asked a couple of them that had this attitude, and they said, well, you know, we passed exam, we worked real hard to get where we got, and we feel that we deserve to not have to continue studying or whatever, you know. And I said, well, you're missing the best fun, because that's what you're learning. You can use a lot of stuff you learn in school. You don't use that much. So now Amy's been looking to find it.
Yeah. Can I interrupt here for a minute?
Please.
I did find something called the Harvard Egg Study, but it actually does not substantiate any sort of a problem with eggs in diabetes. It's saying that it's basically refuting previous research that linked dietary cholesterol intake with cardiovascular disease. And
that's
so,
what I thought.
Yeah,
I've
exactly.
Seen this before.
Exactly. Uh-huh. So it's saying basically that dietary cholesterol intake has absolutely nothing to do with cardiovascular disease.
Yeah.
Which
She's
is
perfect.
Good. That's what we know. So,
Kathy
yeah.
might have
That's what
up.
We know, and yeah. I hope other doctors read that.
Yeah. There's possibly another. It says dietary cholesterol and the risk of cardiovascular disease in patients. This is a review of the Harvard Egg Study and other data. And might have been an older study she's looking at. But
it could have been. This one's 2009, though, so, you know.
But a lot of times the title of the – if you don't go past the title of the article, many times you can pick up something because you read this dietary cholesterol and the risk of cardiovascular disease in patients. If that's all you read, you're going to think
– Yeah, it's going to sound
– Dietary cholesterol causes risk in cardiovascular disease.
Well, that's the propaganda, and it sells an awful lot of low-fat products, statin drugs, you know, which does nothing to promote heart health at all.
Mm-mm.
And so,
are you saying that people that take statin drugs don't live longer?
that's what I'm saying. Yeah, there is. They can eke out just a little bit of an improvement with these people, but all that could be explained because through a secondary accidental effect that statin drugs have, and that is they tend to reduce inflammation a little bit. So if you're going to say, well, it can reduce your risk of heart disease, but it has nothing to do, I believe, with their ability to lower cholesterol levels.
Okay.
Well, and actually, long-term studies aren't showing any change in mortality. So, I mean, people are still having heart attacks. Mm-hmm. They're just, they're just on statins.
Right.
Cholesterol's lower. Woohoo!
Well, they get muscle wasting. That's a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's good times.
You know? So
yeah, it's been shown that statin drugs can promote heart failure, and that failure can be reversed by giving the patient CoQ10 or lowering or stopping the statin drug.
Right.
The statins block CoQ10, and the heart needs CoQ10 to function. And 10 milligrams of Lipitor lowers CoQ10 levels by at the end of the first year by 47%.
That's just crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's so, and the original studies showing niacin really worked very well before the statin drugs came out. And all of a sudden, you don't hear about niacin anymore.
Well, and it's protective for several years after you stop taking it. So, yeah.
The niacin?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it shows long-term.
Are you saying the statin drugs don't protect you long-term if you quit taking it?
No, they sure
really?
Don't. But niacin does. I think they did a follow-up study for the original niacin studies after 5 years and then again after 10 years. And the people who were on niacin in the original study actually had better mortality and morbidity rates than the other groups in the study, which they couldn't explain by anything other than the niacin. So.
Well, your new seminar, I'm anxious to hear about that, because I'm sure this is a great seminar to cover that, to cover how you can protect your heart naturally and avoid prescription drugs, maybe, right?
Well, sure. And that's the goal here, because, you know, we want to be able to take the pharmaceutical companies and the insurance companies out of this equation if we can, and that's my goal, because you can't trust either one. So what we're going to do is teach people how to find out if they have cardiovascular disease. It's a test they can go. Any of the hospitals can do it. They get a rapid CAT scan of their heart. It'll give them a calcium score of their coronary arteries. It'll tell them which one of those arteries are blocked, or if any, and how much, to get a quantification on that. In other words, it'll be, you know, zero. I had a person the other day had a calcium score of 7,900, which is the highest I've heard yet. And so, you know, I had one with 4,300, and he had no symptoms whatsoever, but he was getting testosterone shots from my clinic for about the last 9 years, and that dilates coronary arteries and allows the heart to respond to that. So we're going to talk about ways to keep you healthy in spite of cardiovascular disease. And then also, if you have it, how you can go about cleaning that out. And there's great research, including the results of a lot of my patients. I've got a few that have not responded to this. Now, we did stop the increase that was happening in their calcium score and the clogging of their coronary arteries, so we halted it. That's not quite good enough for me. I want to start cleaning that stuff out. And so I didn't consider that a success. But the majority of the patients that follow this program are able to clean out their coronary arteries, as evidenced by a follow-up rapid CAT scan of their heart, another calcium score. And so, plus, you know, just like everything you do that's natural for you that is beneficial to you, then it helps you in so many other ways that we haven't even figured out yet.
This might be a good time to remind people that what we're saying has not been approved by the FDA. It's evidence-based medicine.
That's though. Good.
Yeah. Well, we're thinking about putting a warning label on our bottles that says, warning, this drug has been approved by the FDA.
Yeah. Well, the FDA has no credibility.
They're lost it, haven't they? Just like Ron Paul was saying.
Yeah, they've lost it completely.
Yeah.
Yeah, they really have. It's sad.
Yeah. So, but we have evidence to show. And also, I need to remind people, even though we say some things about statin drugs and their side effects, we encourage you never to quit taking your statin drugs or get off any medication we talk about, or not get a shot. If we're going to talk about the side effects of shots, that doesn't mean we're not trying to tell you not to get a shot. I think that everybody in this free choice system we should have should know about the dangers of all these drugs they take, shouldn't they, doctor?
Absolutely, yeah. And that's what
we're saying. No, right. The side effects, and you have a choice. You want to take that, or you want to take niacin, or go see Dr. Sebring or Dr. Amy Neuzel, naturopath, and you can avoid a lot of this.
So, you really can.
Yeah. So real quickly here, in the next 2 minutes here, can we talk about something you're doing with dementia that's working
right.
Well?
That's right. Well, what we're doing, you know, people can have the insulting problems of having even the genetics that tend to perpetuate Alzheimer's. You know, if you have some genetic makeup, that can put you at higher risk. That doesn't mean you're going to get it. And I think the best way to understand this is to recognize we had a lot of organ reserve. In other words, we have more brain volume, if you will, and capacity than we really need. And you have to have lost a fair amount of that volume. You have to reach below or shrink down to a critical mass before you have any symptoms. And if you can maintain that level and that health and that volume, and you can maintain your functionality, you don't lose functionality. You go below that critical mass and that size as the brain shrinks naturally. Then when you get below that, then the brain doesn't work very well. We're trying to time that so it happens after you're dead.
Okay. That sounds good.
That sounds good. So you maintain your functionality throughout. So to have that sort of loss and a focus loss in the areas, you know, the amygdala, et cetera, that's involved with Alzheimer's, the area of the brains that shrink and are injured in a much more accelerated way, you need to treat the brain circumferentially. We need to, by that I mean, treat from many different directions. Good nutrition, good relaxation, good physical exercise has proven to be probably the most important thing a person can do that has been actually studied to help brain function. And so it's actually more important than mental activity. Although, you know, working crossword puzzles has shown to be more effective than any of the drugs for Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
And then folic acid, high-dose folic acid, like 5 milligrams, or even a better form of folic acid, a 5-methyl tetrahydrofolate. A lot of people aren't very good at making that form of folic acid. And that's the actual intracellular form of folic acid. And so you can take that. I know y'all carry it, and it's be found in a supplement form. And that has also proven, though the folic acid has proven to be more effective than any of the Alzheimer's drugs. So, and going to a liver detox, we do that a lot of times to help the liver. You know, you're sort of like cleaning out your filter so it can work better. And if you can keep the brain healthy and we can get rid of our own metabolic waste products more efficiently, then the brain can work well. There's supplements like phosphatidylserine, phosphatidylcholine, I mentioned folic acid, the omega-3s, the fish oils are really important for that. And diabetes has actually been demonstrated that there's a form of diabetes, a third type. We have type 1, type 2. And now the third type is what some people are calling it, is a diabetes in the brain. That's very specific. It's a little bit different form. But you would treat it much the same way by reducing the or improving insulin sensitivity, doing those things that improves the effects of the insulin and decreasing the amount of carbohydrates in the diet. We're always told, you know, you need to eat carbohydrates, and it's just way overdone. I think carbohydrates are sort of a secondary food. You need to eat a lot of meat, chicken, fish, turkey from animals eating their natural food. And I can't overemphasize that. Free-range chicken, free-range beef, you know, free-range fish. Those are very healthy sources of food. And then your vegetables should be next on your plate. And you can have vegetables and meat with each meal. Talk about a way of starting your day. Have a 14-ounce ribeye hot off the grill and a big green salad, or, you know, 2 or 3 ounces of spinach to go with that, and you're going to do wonderful all day long with that daily start. So those are some of the directions we've gone with this, and we see some major improvement. We just give B12 shots, and that can be a way to get the B12s up. I know, Amy, you and I both have tried the sublinguals and the B12s, and some people that seems to work, and some it doesn't.
Yeah.
I'm
yeah.
doing lab testing, so at least with a shot, you know, it's in there.
It's for sure getting in there.
It is getting in there, and these people, you know, they come back in and they say, can I get a B12 shot? You know, even the ones that don't have Alzheimer's, but that can be life-altering. I often talk about a lady that was playing Free Cell on the computer, and she got to a point where she could not, the little card game, she couldn't take more than one step ahead, and you need to plan out 5 or 6 steps. She couldn't play it anymore, and we got her on some B12 shots and a pretty heavy regimen, and she was back to thinking 5, 6, and 7 steps ahead now, and that's been going on for many years. So there's often nutritional deficiencies that we look for. We have some testing we can do to target that and help us tease out what exactly a person needs.
Let me tell you why this is so important. If you get this month's issue of Scientific American, there's a big feature article about turbocharging the brain. So yeah. I thought, well, this is great. They're going to talk about the B12 and all the natural ways you can turbocharge the brain, because, you know, that's what people want to do today. You know, they're looking for these smart drugs, obviously, so that's fine. You know, the neuroenhancers, the nootropics, and even they call Viagra for the brain. And they say the 1990s proclaimed the decade of the brain by George W. Bush. And now it's been followed by what might be labeled the decade of the better brain. So, you know, so they have to show, I guess they have to throw a little politics in there. I just read a little of the article and then I laid it down. I hadn't finished reading it, because what they're talking about is these enhancers that, you know, will help you to improve your concentration and memory and planning, like you just said. But guess what? They're talking about Ritalin and amphetamines and things like that. Well,
Ritalin's
suggest
great for the brain.
They talked about putting Ritalin next to the Pepto-Bismol out front.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Can you believe that?
No.
That's the exact words that they said. So I'll get you a copy of this so you could talk about it.
History hurts my brain.